Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity. I'm Greg Corumbus. And Jim, I think most people probably didn't realize that yesterday was actually an election day. In fact, a lot of people in Wisconsin may not have realized it was an election day, although if they watched their television sets anytime recently, they certainly knew that the marquee race on the ballot, there were many around the state, but the big one was for a seat on the Supreme Court. There was an incumbent, conservative-leaning Justice David Prosser, being challenged by the Assistant Attorney General Joanne Kloppenburg. It seems like there's not actually party affiliation here, but it's pretty clear that Prosser leans to the right and Kloppenburg would lean to the left. And because there's currently about a 4-3 split leaning towards the right on the state Supreme Court, a lot of people saw this as a absolutely critical race because obviously the collective bargaining law that was recently passed and disputed now could end up before these justices. And in an interesting way, when it looked like we were talking just a few weeks ago that Scott Walker, the governor, and Republicans were taking a public relations beating, this race is almost exactly tied. It's completely within the margin of error. Depending on the press reports you see, it could be anywhere from about a 450-vote lead for Kloppenburg or even as high as 830 votes for Prosser. Obviously, there's a few precincts left, and this is probably going to end up in the courts itself. But we're making this the good martini because what looked to be a bloodbath for the conservative side here didn't turn out that way.
The latest number that I see from the AP as of this taping, and by the time people listen to this, it may change, has Kloppenburg up by 309, five precincts to report. At least two of them are supposed to be likely to shrink that margin. So we'll see how this shakes out. For Republicans, this is actually something of a pleasant surprise. A lot of the vibes going into this were pretty bad for the right. The word was that the unions were fired up like crazy, as they really should have been, because this legislation put forward would end up having an enormous impact on their ability to raise money and collect dues and be the political force that they have been. So for them, this was a life and death struggle, and the unions held nothing back and dumped as much money into this as they could. So their turnout was up, but the turnout in Republican areas was actually pretty darn good as well. So the idea that this is going to come down to less than 1% is pretty darn shocking. I'm not terribly optimistic. The cynical conservatives among us tend to look at the numbers like this and say, "Ah, well, it's still within the margin of fraud, so we're not going to win this one." We'll see what happens. I'm awaiting the cries of disenfranchisement and as people to fight start finding forgotten ballots in desk drawers and car trunks and all the other places we've seen this. A lot of people, predicting that Al Franken will be the surprise winner of this election, having seen a similar frustrating recount over in Minnesota. So some good signs for the right in this. The fact that this was not the steamrolling by the unions that everybody expected is pretty interesting. And I think it kind of suggests that perhaps there is a backlash to the tactics of the union, storming into the state capitol and refusing to leave, et cetera, et cetera. That may have irked the Wisconsin public more than polls had indicated so far.
On to number two now, and it's going to bear a very strong resemblance to the one we did yesterday, but only with greater frustration here, because it's even more evident that the Democrats, while going on MSNBC and all these other places and talking about how it's Republicans who are going to shut down the government because of the radical influence of the Tea Party that John Boehner just can't control as much as he'd like to, the Democrats simply can't go along with that agenda because old people, children, and veterans will starve, which I think is pretty much their belief what will happen at the end of any Republican-sponsored legislation. President Obama took to the White House press room on Tuesday afternoon and made some absolutely incredible statements. And by incredible, I mean not credible. Here's the first one, in him explaining how long this process has been going on and who's really to blame here.
Keep in mind, we're dealing with a budget that could have gotten done 3 months ago, could have gotten done 2 months ago, could have gotten done last month, when we are this close simply because of politics.
Could have been done 12 months ago, 11 months ago, 10 months ago. The president making no apparent reference to the fact that the Democrats intentionally ignored the budget process last year because they didn't want to put out a number that could hurt them at the polls in November. Here's the president following up on that and talking about how he and the Republicans really are talking about the same numbers here, and it's really just a matter of politics.
And I shouldn't have to oversee a process in which Congress deals with last year's budget where we only have 6 months left, especially when both parties have agreed that we need to make substantial cuts and we're more or less at the same number.
The only difference is that the president, Jim, is talking about numbers that never existed, because they're talking about cuts that never actually got passed to his previous budget, where Republicans are talking about the numbers as they actually exist. Later, the president talked about how he's ready to meet with them at any day, any time leading up to the deadline here on Friday, except for the fact that he's leaving for Pennsylvania today to go do a clean energy event. So just a fascinating.
He's in charge, even though he's not there. He is focused like a laser beam, except when he leaves town to do stuff on separate issues.
Exactly.
And, you know, right. Maybe golf.
And, you know, just the fact that he is galled, apparently, at the fact that he has to be involved in this process. The fact that he has to actually be involved in trying to figure out what the nation's fiscal future might be. Just amazing that he would have to take on that responsibility. I can't believe that the Congress is making him do that.
Well, one of the things that's kind of striking about this is there are a few members of the House Republicans and you know, your Tea Party activists who will say a government shutdown, if the government shuts down, it'll show Americans that we're serious about cutting the budget. And Republicans will prosper. But by and large, I mean, Boehner himself has said if the government shuts down, Democrats are likely to be the political winners. You don't have to look very far to find Democrats who are open about this. I mean, Howard Dean openly said that he's going to be, you know, if he was still running the Democratic National Committee, he'd be quietly rooting for a government shutdown. You watch Chris Matthews, you watch Howard, almost everybody across the spectrum believes a government shutdown is good for Democrats. So if that's the case, and then there seems, like I said, there's this bipartisan consensus that even though the polls look like it's an even split, sooner or later the public will blame the Republicans for this. What incentive do the Democrats have to not have a government shutdown? I would argue none, and I think it's becoming increasingly clear that the fact that they're not really going to go above 30 million or 40 million, or they have to use this imaginary number of 70 million that, well, we once thought of spending this money, so if we don't spend it, that counts as a cut. We could probably rightfully deride as imaginary cuts. Clearly, they want this. And sometimes they're, you know, like Dean, they're open enough to admit it. But you can kind of just tell from their actions, you know, if they really thought this was the worst possible scenario. And by the way, you know, Greg, you notice this is the party that shut down the government, the legislature in Wisconsin, shut down the legislature in Indiana. But shutting down the federal government, that's apocalypse now, and we can't let that happen in any way, shape, or form. So it's okay for certain parts of the government to shut down, but not, you know, the government as a whole. We have this scenario in which the Democrats really have no incentive to compromise, because they're absolutely convinced that if it comes to the full-fledged shutdown disaster scenario, they think they win. So how is Boehner supposed to get a deal in those circumstances? You know, I guess the question will come down to who does the public really believe on this? But what will be interesting, if the public does eventually turn on Republicans, it'll be fascinating in that the prediction of that reaction is what sowed the seeds of the actual shutdown. The Democrats were convinced they had nothing to lose in going forward, you know, in letting a shutdown occur. And, you know, that sort of thing makes negotiations arguably impossible, and if not, you know, phenomenally difficult.
Absolutely right. And for the second straight day, the ball's in your court, America. You did a great job in November. Now the rubber really meets the road, and we need you to stand up strong. So we'll see if you do. On to number three now, and we've talked about both of these issues. The president's rolling out the 2012 reelection campaign video. We picked it apart big time just a couple days ago, having people talk about how excited they were to support his reelection because he won last time. And because they couldn't vote last time, or because there's a lot that still needs to be done that he has apparently not done. So absolutely no substance to the video. Back on April Fool's Day on Friday, we played the parody ad from the National Republican Senatorial Committee talking about rainbows and unicorns and really going through some of the issues about the president not wanting to drill here, but excitedly wanting to buy oil from Brazil, making the big decisions about who's going to win the NCAA tournament and so forth, just really going through in a very sarcastic way, picking apart how the president's been a failure. Politico reporting today, Jim, that the parody ad has been viewed three times more often than the one that was actually announcing the president's reelection bid, which might actually be a good thing for the president, considering how vapid it was.
Ben Smith was the one who noticed this yesterday. After that point, you know, the Obama ad, the real Obama ad had only been out for like a day or so. And the parody ad came out, obviously, on April Fool's Day. So there's a couple extra days for people to watch the Republican parody ad. So you figure that after, you know, Ben Smith had spotlighted this, the Democrats would say, oh, you know, we gotta forward this up, because look, this is the debut message of Obama's reelection campaign. And here we are a day later, and the margin is still 3-1. And I think this says a couple of things. The first is, I had joked at the beginning, well, of course, you know, the parody ad, Greg, that has substance to it. That has, you know, that's talking about real issues like healthcare and energy, unlike the Obama, you know, let's talk to ordinary Americans and show them playing with their kids. That, actually, that sarcastic rejoinder actually seems pretty accurate in that, you know, the parody ad is kind of saying, you know, we're laughing. You're watching the unicorn farting rainbows. But at the same time, in there is this ridiculousness of Obama seeming to want us to get off the addiction to American-produced energy, talking about how much he looks forward to buying oil from Brazil that they're drilling off their shores, the anger over the health care bill, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, even though it's a parody and it's funny, it's making a real point. The debut ad from Obama, the more you look at it, you realize, what's it about? I mean, here are five Americans who are talking about, well, the 2012 election is going to be really important. Well, no kidding. was that really in dispute? Was that, needed to be reinforced to anybody? One woman says, well, there's so much left undone. Yeah, that's why we want to get rid of Obama, man. Or when she said, well, you know, that we want to see people get jobs and we want to see people see. Yes, we have high unemployment. Foreclosures are terrible. This is why we want to change presidents. and, you know, it's very strange they would put out an ad that's you know, got all the substance of cotton candy, you know, of just, you know, things are important and we need to, you know, it is so mealy-mouthed that I think it's kind of interesting that it's not something people would instinctively say, hey, you got to take a look at this. Hey, my Obama-loving friend, take, you know, you got to receive this message. This really fires us up. Whereas you and I, Greg, I mean, we see, you know, Obama riding a unicorn and say, oh, my God, I've got to send that to all my friends. It's hilarious.
Exactly. There's the difference. And I think hopefully we're a little more fired up, too, not only due to the fact that one ad has substance, as mocking as it was, while the other one's just a complete mirage. But, you know, we'll see what happens. The president's going to probably raise, allegedly, $1 billion to try and shove his message down everybody's throat. So a lot of work yet to be done, but good to see it start this way. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Join us on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.